Welcome to Our Thoughts Tonight. Join us as we chat in a mellow mood about music, philosophy, psychology, and anything else that will come to mind. Enjoy.
Welcome to Our Thoughts Tonight. I'm Murat, and here is Ashik with me. And we have a very special guest today, Mr. Vince Sellers, an ex-FBI agent.
Correct. Yes, thank you guys for having me. Vince Sellers, live here in Austin, Texas. And yes, I'm a former FBI agent, and I'm glad it is that way. I was only in for a couple of years, and we'll talk about that a little bit more today, I'm sure. But a very interesting adventure, and glad I went on the ride, and also I'm glad I'm off the ride. So, but I really appreciate you guys having me on today. Very thought-provoking podcast. So I hope you guys keep doing this and keep growing your audience, because you've got some really interesting thoughts and good content for the audience.
Thank you.
Cool. Yeah, well, thank you so much for that.
I want to ask you if you can tell our audience and us about your book and your YouTube channel, which is where I found out about you and your book from.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, sure. I'll talk about that for a moment. So the book kind of dates back to when I was even in the FBI. So that was just in the first decade there, 2005 to 2007 range. I was in, like I say, just a couple of years in San Diego. So, of course, I went to the FBI Academy in Virginia. And I originally was from the San Antonio area. So went to Virginia, then to San Diego, and had an exciting time out there. And I'll tell a few more stories there. But as I was in, the longer I was in, I realized this is really not the career I thought it was going to be, and was kind of, I just knew it, I could just feel in my heart it was not going to be just what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. But it was very interesting to me, the work. So I thought this would be fun to write down for friends and family. I should write a book. Not that I did anything amazing, but to me, I thought, well, the interesting part is that it's just kind of a typical, what I went through is pretty much the same experience for everybody that goes through. And there's wonderful books out there, very exciting, people tracking down terrorists and doing all kinds of amazing stuff. I really didn't do anything, but I thought, well, people might want to hear about just normal experience. And I remembered why I wanted in so bad, and I was so interested in, true crime and all those things. And I still am. I remember that desire not having any information out there to really learn, like, well, what's it really like? And you see these official publications, and then you have these, former FBI director writes their book. Well, good experience for them. But what it's like for the little guy that just comes in, like, what's it like the day to day? So I thought, well, that'll be cool. I'll write a book. And I know my family will love it. I'm sure my mom will read it. Right. So there you go. And she did. And she actually helped me. She's a former English teacher and helped me do a little editing on it, fortunately. But anyway, so that's kind of where it stemmed from the book. And I remember kind of writing the chapter outlines as I was sitting in my car on various stakeouts and stuff, just killing time, because sometimes you're in a car sitting there for 12 hours watching a door. Not real exciting, but I start writing on a napkin, a little, literally on a napkin, chapter outlines, like, well, I could just write a kind of simple book that walks through the whole process of joining the FBI. And then what's it like being just an agent just out there on the streets? Just what's the day to day? So that's that's the book. I wound up calling it Eyes Pride Open, Rookie FBI Agent. So, it really did open my eyes, and I like the word pride, said eyes wide, pride, whatever. But
I thought that was a great title. I enjoy the title. I'm actually about almost halfway through the book, and honestly, I didn't know. I mean, I've watched almost all of your YouTube videos, and I hadn't started the book until you agreed to joining the podcast on about a month ago for this episode, and I just blew through the first half within a week, because I actually was listening to the audiobook as I was driving around, like driving to work and such. And I would take like the extra long route to get to work so I could continue listening. because it's so entertaining. And my current one of my dreams is to also do what you did, but honestly, it sounds way more tough than I. Especially the training process sounds like complete hell, based off of how you explained. Yeah. But also enjoyable at the same time.
Oh, good. Yeah, no. And sometimes I look back, and occasionally, like, I mean, I'm a human being, and there's all types of readers that read the book, and there are people, they're former FBI agents that put in a great career, and current, you know, law enforcement officers that are, you know, that deservedly can say, wow, you know, kind of a crybaby here, you know, good riddance to you for joining and then leaving. Thank you very much. So I have had some feedback about how honest I am about my feelings during the process. But you know what? I would say my opinions in that are probably reflective. And I'm not trying to exaggerate here, but I'd say no question in my mind, 70 to 80% of the agents going through were dealing with the exact same things I was. Pretty miserable, at the FBI Academy, and a rewarding experience. So just like, you know, I'm a distance runner too. I run marathons, which, also tells you a lot about me. Maybe my head should be examined. What's fun about that? But it's challenging. And then at the time it may be really miserable. And then when you're done, you're like, yeah, that's cool. I'm glad I accomplished that. So for me, it was sort of like a 5-month marathon. But, anyway, so yeah, that's, and I'll talk a little bit more about that, but just kind of wrap it up on the book. Wanted to write a book about it. Managed to get the book out there. And then I thought, well, I'll jump on this YouTube thing and talk some about what it's like, the hiring process and how to join the FBI, just to help people out. And of course, promote the book. I thought that'd be a good way to get that out there. And then funny enough, this YouTube channel, my YouTube's former FBI agent, so the YouTube channel kind of took off, and the book, I wouldn't say I forget that I write the book, but it's sort of ancient history in my mind, because I wrote that now almost 10 years ago or whatever, right? So, and it's published 6 years ago, 5 or 6 years ago, but the YouTube kind of keeps me engaged, and I still think it's a neat experience, and sometimes I can't even believe, like, I'm just a normal corporate guy now. I say corporate guy. Actually, I work for the state of Texas. I do IT long-term strategic planning. So very different, technology planning versus FBI agent, very different career. And so sometimes I'll be in a meeting or something. Someone will say, oh yeah, you were in the FBI, right? And I'm like, oh yeah, I was. It almost seems foreign, but the FBI, the channel on YouTube is a good way for me to kind of stay engaged with that. And I genuinely enjoy telling people about the experience and helping people get some perspective of what it's really like. And it's not, it's a great organization overall. It's great people. And I don't, I like to encourage people to give it a try. But I also like to tell people that it's okay if you decide, maybe that isn't, the right path for me. And it is very difficult to get in. And I know I've, email with people all the time and I see comments, but I've had plenty of people that make it most of the way through the process and then get cut at the end and their hearts are broken. And believe me, I know how I would have felt in their shoes. And I just like to convey to them that it's not as many things in life. If you're not happy at your core, if you're not really settled and happy in life, being an FBI agent isn't going to make you happy in life. It may be something you're passionate about and would enjoy doing, but it's not going to change your life. And you hear sometimes actors and people say the same thing that, oh, I got famous and I'm still the same person, I think it's the same, any FBI agent, they're human beings, they're people. And, they've got their flaws and their insecurities and personality quirks and stuff. I do as well. And none of us are perfect and we're all human beings. And being an FBI agent, it's a job and it's an important job. But it's not the end all be all to happiness in life, I assure you, because I am much happier having been in and now being out. Life is wonderful.
Speaking of these opinions and whatnot and your YouTube channel. So you mentioned earlier with your book that, some FBI agents have been like, critical, I suppose. And I suppose these opinions on your YouTube channel, have your old colleagues gone back to you about these things? Like, do they support you? Like, I'm a little interested about that, what they think.
Sure. So, Yeah, I think most of them just think it's they like it and they think it's cool. Yeah. And even so I have some friends that are former and some that are current agents. And yeah, I think universally the people that I kind of befriended with or would have stayed in contact were kind of like-minded, and they know it's not perfect. The ones that are they're in and the ones that are out, certainly there's some that were, you know, roughly my age that got in and also happily exited. And not because, again, FBI, it is a great organization, but it's a massive bureaucracy.
Yeah.
And, you know, you kind of got to realize that and be able to deal with some of the frustrations. You know, for me, I got in, you know, and I really think, you know, the vast majority of people, 98% of FBI agents go in purely good intentions, and they want to do good in the world and make it a better place. And I think the vast majority of them try to do that. And then some of us maybe overthink things a little bit. And I came from a kind of a quality background, you know, like manufacturing and then corporate, but, you know, all about the Six Sigma and all, you know, all that kind of stuff. But hey, if we want, you know, we're always questioning every single business process or manufacturing process. How can we make it better? I was just used to that. And you get in the FBI and there's really no questioning about the process at all. The process is the process. It's literally in a book that they give you. This is how you investigate a bank robbery. This is how you do this. This is how you do this. Huh. Like, oh, well, what if we tried to get ahead of the curve and do some things? Like, you know, for me, like working, and I was assigned to work violent crime and, you know, bank robberies and kidnappings. Not that you can always cut, you know, in society, those things are going to occur, at least for my lifetime. Maybe someday we'll be to a point that Star Trek future that I'd like to get to where law enforcement isn't needed, but there's always going to be some bad characters. But I do think that there's things that you can do upstream, even with some of these reactive crimes that, you know, bank robberies, there are things, if you step back, start looking at the factors, and maybe it's a combination of better security and understanding your community. I don't know. But like, hey, why don't, you know, let's try to not just resolve bank robberies. Why don't our job should be to put ourselves out of a job, right? And and I do improvements in state government and stuff now, some similar, but with technology. But my opinion's always, hey, let's do stuff so well that we don't need any people. Let's put ourselves out of a job. So the FBI doesn't, you just don't have that thinking. It's like, no, we got a bank robbery. We're going to go work the bank robbery. We need people to work the bank robbery, not tell me how we should work bank robberies or how to decrease them. Yeah. You know, see what I'm saying? So
yeah.
I kind of was one of those, I'm the new guy too. So what am I going to do? Right. So I go work the bank robberies over and over and over, and sitting there thinking, yeah, you know, I actually think I enjoy improving things more than just reacting to things, if that makes sense.
So yeah.
I think the more cerebral you are, and you guys and Marat, I don't know, you're pretty cerebral. You're probably borderline like me. I'm sure you could probably be a very successful agent. And you also might get in and find out that, you know, that it's more challenging in some of these ways I'm describing than you would think. But then again, yeah, there are people that stick with it, have a whole career, and then really try to change the organization. And I, you know, I just didn't want to spend my life trying to do that, and so I quit.
Yeah, I've listened to. I can't even remember how I found your YouTube channel. I think I was just so excited about this decision that I had finally wanted to actually try this down the road. And I just started watching your videos, and I really appreciate your honesty. Honestly, I think that, you know, it can be glamorized, like the I think what was his name, like the John Douglas profiling books, or you know, glamorized version. And they're super entertaining, don't get me wrong, but I appreciate how honest your takes are. It really brings it down to earth.
100%. So if you don't mind me asking a question, Marat, so are you actively, are you going to apply, or have you already applied and trying to go through the process, or kind of gearing up for that maybe?
I'm in the process of getting my degree for my psychology undergrad right now. Sure. And I'm thinking about getting my master's and then applying in that after that.
Excellent. Okay. Fantastic.
And I don't know. It's a toss up. I don't know if I actually will. Yeah. It's a daunting thing, especially speaking of bank robberies, like you mentioned, the the point in the book that I'm at right now is, I think it's one of your first days or something, and you think that you locked your keys in your trunk. And I stopped there, and I was like, I can't believe it. This is just, it's so exciting. And I think you're on the way to a bank robbery or something.
There are a number of silly things I did, and that, you know, fair criticism. Maybe I wasn't the best FBI agent material. I mean, of course, I'm going to say I did well.
I was not critiquing your efficacy, but how entertaining the book is.
I just tried to keep it real. You know, there were some dumb things, like we all do, like we've all been there, right? And just because you're an FBI agent doesn't mean you're not going to lock your keys in your car, or worse, leave your sidearm, your Glock, in a lockup in another police station, because that was their process, is to lock it up. You get your prisoner, you go with your other FBI agent partner to another prison or to the FBI, and you realize, oh, I forgot my gun. not good. So, but it happens, you know, it happens. And so I thought, you know, that's the funny part, because I didn't do any, you know, I didn't do anything amazing. I did a lot of cool stuff, but to me, I thought I'm going to tell the fun stuff, all the stuff that most people probably wouldn't tell. That's the more interesting stuff. So yeah, I'm glad you're enjoying that. That makes me happy.
Really, not to change subjects or whatnot, but sure. I've been trying to, earlier when you mentioned, I suppose, the rigidness of the FBI, and I'm sure you've probably dealt with this in the book as well. Is there any sort of flexibility, is there any sort of, I suppose, hope for flexibility in the FBI of what you're kind of advocating for? Or is it just kind of like, it's just set in stone, it's not even going anywhere kind of thing?
So are you talking in regards to like a sort of a career path? So I got kind of thrown into doing this bank robbery and
that kind of stuff.
Or are you thinking more general, like with the, you know, a process, like how you approach things
Mostly just the process sort of thing.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's a great question. Again, it's been, you know, now a number of years since I've been in. So I hope that they're better about that and listen to the agents. But certainly when I was in, and I'm sure it's still very similar to some degree anyway, is it's pretty rigid. I mean, it's very, based on how long you've been in.
Sorry, yeah.
The right words leaving my head, of course, but seniority. Yes. Seniority based. And if you're brilliant and you come in and you've got the world's best ideas, you're only there for, you know, you've only been there for 5 years, which isn't very long. The FBI, keep working your job, come back in 10 years, and then maybe you can, you know, get into the management ranks and start changing things and work your way to, you know, to Washington, D.C., where they're setting the policies and doing that kind of stuff. So where other organizations, and I think any really good, high-performing organization has good communication pathways from the lowest level employees, so to speak, all the way up to the CEO. If you're brand new, you're a delivery driver working for Amazon, and you realize, like, oh, what if we just did this process change, and maybe some amazing change. They should be able to suggest that, and then have that adopted in a rapid fashion. And they should have a process to ingest those types of changes and suggestions. FBI, they didn't have a suggestion box.
Yeah.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah. So that makes me, I want to follow up with that. Cause the thing is, like, if, you know, with everything going on right in the social political world right now, with a rigid FBI, do you think there is, I suppose, further conflict, further, separation between these, the interests of like whatever social movements are going on and a rigid FBI system? Because on the one hand, it's going miles and miles to, you know, whether you support or not, like things like, you know, anti-cop stuff. And then you have a no suggestion box FBI. Like, where do you think that's going to go, really?
That's a wonderful question. I like that. And that is, you really hit the nail on the head there with a very valid concern. And I think that, you know, for the FBI or any law enforcement entity to succeed, that relationship, that feedback directly with the community is critical. And you know, it's such a cliche, right? Say, yeah, communication's important, be it relationships or anything. But you know what, it is true. And and I think that not, you know, the engagement with the community and the ability, not only for agents, but also the community to directly impact policy and have say, hey, we're the FBI, are citizens as well. We are here for the benefit of citizens. We're not here just to arrest citizens. We're here to make the community better. How can we do that? Yes, we need to arrest bank robbers and bad guys, of course. But also, what are the things, and kind of what I, some of my frustration early on, like, well, what are things we can do better? If they don't listen, then that's an issue. And I really can't say what the state of affairs is, because I'm really not in that position to know. But that's a wonderful question, and I hope that dialogue improves, and the ability for that to adapt, I guess, which is so critical, improves. But I don't know that I've seen that based on the last few years. Last few years have definitely made me, well, I'm two hands. I'm glad I'm not in the middle of that, because I see both sides. And I really do think that the FBI, man, the agents are great people. They want to make their communities better that they live in, of course, right? They're good people. But I'm sure it's very frustrating for them. And I know it is for a fact from some of them. I know it's frustrating for some of them, for some of the reasons, you know, kind of you're alluding to. It is an old school kind of mentality, and they have to adapt and change quickly. And I hope they can.
Yeah. And just as a quick note, I know you've been out of, you know, the business, quote unquote, for a while now, but I suppose to you personally, like one criticism that some people might have is the whole idea of, I suppose, that conditioning going into the FBI. I know it's changed since then, but like, was that something apparent to you? I know you mentioned the getting used to the whole way the FBI works, but did you notice a sort of, I suppose, personality shift or conditioning, basically? That's usually a criticism that I hear a lot of various institutions like this.
Okay, sure. So, yeah. And when you say conditioning, because I want to make sure I answer the question. So obviously not physical conditioning, but you think kind of more the, you know, you're kind of institutionalized.
Yeah.
Coming in, and this is the way the FBI thinks. Old life is done. Now you're in this new entity. We're all in it together. This is the way we see things. Is that kind of what you're kind of indoctrinated into this?
Exactly. Yeah.
Sure. Sure. I follow you. Yeah. That's a really good question. You know, when I went in, it is a different perspective than I'm used to. The FBI is very strongly oriented and comprised of people that have been in the military or law enforcement. So that is a culture that is, it is what it is. And it is law enforcement, right? So that is the culture. But I think that the backgrounds, and I noticed this with the new agents in my class. I mean, there's me and coming from kind of a corporate engineering background, but nothing to do with law enforcement. There were some other folks that that did not come from law enforcement that I would absolutely throw in that bucket that, had a kind of a different perspective. And, you know, we'd look at each other sometimes on these processes or things like, okay, all right, if you say so. And it is, and then the FBI Academy, there's no doubt that it is led by largely, and it varies, and the classroom instructors, there's, you know, it varies the quality of instructors, but overall they're very good, especially the classroom portion. Especially some of the defensive tactics, you know, all the boxing and wrestling and cuffing and stuff and whatever you want to say. They are largely very hardcore former, you know, Navy SEALs and that kind of stuff. And they love being mean. And I elaborate this, you know, in the book, you know, knuckle pushups and all these things that they're there. It's almost like a boot camp. So there's certainly not a lot of, at least when I was in, it's pretty much the opposite of what we're talking about today on the podcast. Like, well, how is it important to make sure that we can communicate effectively? How important is it to make sure we're listening to the community? How can we get that feedback integrated into our processes to make sure that the FBI is adapting to reflect what the citizens want and need. And yes, mm-hmm. we've got a job to do. We need to learn how to do that. But mm-hmm. how do we grow? If an organization isn't changing, then they're going downhill, you know, mm-hmm. In my opinion. You got to adapt. I mean, an FBI of the 19, you know, the J. Edgar Hoover going way, way, way back, mm-hmm. Certainly is something that we did learn about that to some degree mm-hmm. in our classroom, to be fair, about some of the bad stuff they do and the illegal, you know, wiretaps and all that stuff. So mm-hmm. you do learn some of that. But again, it's only looking in the rearview mirror and learning, but not saying, okay, yeah, that's fine. It's like driving, looking in your rearview mirror, yeah. going backwards or something like, mm-hmm. guys, how about looking forward a bit
yeah.
more? And there's not a lot of that, at least yeah. when I was in. Last thing I will say, though, that I think is one experience, but I think it's good. All agents do go to the National Holocaust Museum in Washington, mm-hmm. D.C. That's a required field trip, if you will. And they do at least step back and say, let's not become Nazi Germany again, all right, everybody? I mean, basically, this is what can happen, and it's a series of small events that can lead towards a really, clearly a very bad thing. I mean, it's just a horrors. And if you go along with that, then at some point, that's an issue. So they do tell you to stand up and do the right thing and make a difference. But the culture is more seniority based. And I think that's largely an issue in law enforcement. If you're the new rookie and you look at some of these, some of the things that the Black Lives Matter, George Floyd, you know, there's some of these things, some of these rookie police officers, kind of questioning like, hey, this is what we're doing here, guys. Mm-hmm. And you know, you've got a 20-year veteran, like, yep, this is what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And, How do you change the culture where it's okay to question your superiors and you're not going to get reprimanded? You know, how do you tackle that? But we have to. I mean, and you know, there's no magic answer, but there has to be that awareness, and things like this podcast maybe make people kind of pause and think. So
it seems to me that because of the whole rigid system, it's the real. I mean, this is just a glance opinion, but. It seems like it's much more of a top-down issue in terms of changing or this possibility. It seems, you know, and if nothing's coming from the top and if the bottom-up's not working, it's, you know, it gives me cause for concern. But,
absolutely. And, you know, again, kind of the rank and file and military, the hierarchy is you follow what your superiors tell you to do. It's kind of the culture. And again, to be fair, sometimes, yes, you're doing an arrest, you've got SWAT teams, and yes, if the SWAT commander says, get out of the way, then you better get out of the way because he has a good reason. It's not time to pause. So, you know, we're all reasonable people. You guys understand that. Everybody understands that. But say you're back at the office and the SWAT commander maybe could have done something a little differently and you make a recommendation to them, they're probably not going to be real receptive to that because they're the SWAT commander and they've been there for 20 years and you're the new guy. So just back off, new guy. And so I think that the leadership of any organization, again, kind of cliche, but it's one of the most important positions in the world, in my opinion, the FBI director, the message that they send to agents and, you know, the FBI being the overarching largest, you know, federal law enforcement entity. We have offices everywhere. We're in every state, right? And so I think the FBI should be the role model and the leader for how law enforcement should be. And there's going to be pockets, and you know, we can delve into other topics. I've got lots of opinions on some of the flaws in law enforcement and some of the things that I think are unfair criticisms. But there's going to be some issues. Some of these, you know, I'm from Texas, and some of these small town police departments, they have problems, and the FBI sometimes investigates and gets into those things, but at least the FBI should be a leading, you know, kind of role model, if you will. And they do have the thing called the National Academy that police officers can and their police chiefs can go to, but FBI should be a role model. And that should include, hey, how do we really modernize policing? Let's stop complaining about, you know, and finger pointing and say, oh, it's not fair that, you know, CNN had this story and they, you know, didn't report the facts correctly and made us look bad. You know what? Deal with it. Grow up and have a dialogue. Stop the, you know, button heads and have a dialogue. And that starts with the top and the leadership. And so anyway, yeah, little off track there maybe, but
yeah,
you hit the nail on the head. And if the leader is not sending the right message, which should be, you know, communication and ideas, that flows all directions. It is not just me telling thou shalt do this, and then you tell your people thou shalt do this, and then it works its way down. It's got to be able to come from the bottom up, because FBI agents, again, they're good people. They have lots of opinions and ideas on how to make things better. And the more that they can voice that, be it a process or be it, yeah, I live in this community and they're marching around my house demanding change. You know, we need to have a dialogue with these people and get to a mutual understanding. Like, well, this is why this happened, or this was a mistake. Let's admit that this is a horrible mistake. Let's acknowledge it. And then let's tweak our processes to try to prevent it. It'll never be perfect, but that's all people ask for, right? If you have an order screwed up at a drive-through, and then you have to go in and correct it, like, if they apologize and say, yeah, we're sorry about that, but we'll, you know, we messed this up. But if they make it right, then you want to have that dialogue. If they mess it up, that's fine. They want a dialogue to find out, ah, yes, I see you did that. And maybe if there's an error, how do you prevent that in the future? That's all. And if you can't have that dialogue, then that's an issue.
Yeah.
So I do know that you said at one point in one of your chapters, I can't remember, that I believe it's like the interrogation, like read technique, was taught to every agent, and that you found that skill to be one of the most useful, even in your current life, if I'm not mistaken. How do you find those type of communication skills useful in what you currently do, or if you do find it useful in that way?
Sure, sure. Yeah. So certainly, yeah, again, communication is key in life, right? So at the FBI, they do a very good job of teaching you how to, and they, you know, I use the term interrogation because sometimes it literally is a person handcuffed in a room and you're talking to them. So it's sort of an interrogation. You're asking them what they did, but you're not going to, you know, bring out the cigarette butts or have them in a bright light or anything like that. But, in the FBI, they do call them interviews across the board, no matter whether it's interviewing a little old lady who, you know, might've seen a crime out of, you know, down the street, or the, you know, a brutal killer. They're still interviews, but nevertheless, that just a technical term there, just kind of fun. But yeah, they do a very good job at the FBI Academy of training you on how to do these interviews, if you will, be it witnesses or criminals or what have you. You know, being able to put yourselves in the shoes of the criminal, kind of being able to identify with them, sort of rationalize, because criminals and you know, there's plenty out there. Criminals almost always will rationalize what they did. Like, well, I did this, you know, because of these reasons. And sometimes they're actually pretty good reasons, but yeah, sometimes they're not. But in a criminal's mind, usually there's a reason they're in that situation. And if you can identify with that criminal and understand their situation and almost get to where you're explaining to them why they were in that situation, then you can keep them talking. Then that's a good way to get a confession. So that is kind of a technique. I do employ that same technique all the time. Again, I'm, you know, doing these technology planning stuff, but my role specifically is more about being part of a 300 person IT giant amoeba division that's coding stuff and building stuff. I'm kind of the primary person that goes out to, you know, we call them our business divisions or whatever, but they're our customers within this larger, you know, several thousand person agency that they have jobs to do. So I'm good at putting myself in their shoes, understanding where they're coming from. And then I kind of translate back that to IT speak and say, hey guys, we need to do these things to address that. So those skills definitely come in handy. And then they do have some of the other, you know, twitches and, you know, some of the things that you could look for, the level of detail that people have for a story. You know, if it's very vague, you can, you know, sometimes people make stuff up on the fly. If it's some criminal saying, I didn't do this, or here's my alibi, I was doing this, but that, you know, then you'll have the witness or some, what have you, that clearly they're telling the truth because they can describe without a pause, without a hesitation, you know, every detail of a scene, you know, where the sun was, where the car was, how the temperature, and they'll just kind of spout all the stuff out if you can get them to the right point in the conversation. And then you kind of know, yeah, this person, they're clearly telling the truth. But, you know, anyway, so yeah.
I was very surprised at your the way you described, I suppose, the interview and how you, lead, backwards into, finding why they did the crime. I don't know. So for example, your interview / interrogation kind of split there, combined with the whole, the criminal did what he did because of these conditions and kind of thing. But at the end of the day, you're trying to still get a confession. Yeah. Is there, I don't want to say a conflict of interest, but is there, I'm just seeing a little bit of, stress there where you're clearly calling an interrogation, but it's taught as an interview and you're building or you're investigating someone as if you're trying to find where the root is. But at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. As it goes in conversations about punishment and rehabilitation, that whole conversation is whatever. But do you think there's a little bit of, I don't want to say dishonesty, but is there a sort of cloudiness, I suppose, there, if that makes any sense?
Sure. Yeah. I think I get the gist of what you're saying. And there is, it's an interesting profession. So,
yeah.
I don't know if this shows how nerdy I am going way back. So I used to play these, role-playing games, computer role-playing games, that kind of stuff.
Dungeons and Dragons. I support it. Yeah.
But you've got, you're creating your new character and your character alignment. I'm always the, I like to call myself the chaotic. So you can have the, law abiding or kind of chaotic or, mm-hmm. Or not law, but, and then you have kind of the good and evil scale. Yeah. So I consider myself more the good, but not necessarily, this is me playing role play. Like, it's not an FBI, but role playing games. Yeah. I just want to do what's right and fair to me. What I consider just, which mm-hmm. isn't necessarily the spirit, the law. I mean, if someone's, dying of thirst and they need some water, then break into the store that's closed down and get the water, right? That kind of stuff. And there is some, there's a level of that comes into play. Sometimes it's almost non-existent. Crime's a crime. But there are times when, as an FBI agent, I'd be talking to somebody and they would explain their series of circumstances. And, if you really get into their head and understand, the more you understand about a criminal, you start seeing that the truth is we're all human beings. And I really believe that given the same exact upbringing, the same inputs, the same opportunities, that people usually are going to go kind of down a fairly similar path, And so in other words, what I'm getting at this is if I was in their shoes, probably if I came from their background, maybe in their certain family situation, maybe their unemployment situation, maybe their lack of opportunities, that could have been me holding up the bank. And terrible for an FBI agent to say that, right? Like, well, how dare I even think that I could do that? But you know what? If you really get in their mind, which is good to be able to get them to talk, and then you got them, right? You got the confession and everything. And if they did a crime, then you just kind of have to rationalize that they committed a crime. And our system of justice depends on, being able to arrest them and prosecute them for that crime. Mm-hmm. The punishment is sort of out of the hands of the FBI agent. So you just have to have trust, which is another topic. We'll probably have some follow-up questions there in fairness of the justice system. But I'm a human being. I know the justice system isn't always fair. And sometimes someone gets away, they get away with murder, right? And then other times, on the books, there was this drug-related crime, and different areas of the United States, by the way, even at a federal level, they have varying levels that they will or will not pursue a prosecution. So in San Diego, the drug, drug dealers and stuff, you have a lot of the border crime. And so we had a certain tolerance level that the U.S. Attorney's Office just went prosecute. I could arrest people all day long or not. And if it wasn't over certain X amounts, and I honestly don't even remember what they were, but there were thresholds, right? Well, you go to maybe Nebraska and, Omaha, Nebraska, and I'm nothing wrong, Nothing wrong with the good people in Nebraska. Mm-hmm. Their U.S. Attorney's Office, though, may treat that as a pretty serious crime. You had a speck of, you know, pot on the deck. You know, that's serious stuff right there. And so, you know, the justice system, the same laws are on the books for everywhere, but mm-hmm. the way it's applied and prosecuted varies. So maybe I'm getting a little off track, but let me know if I didn't answer your question. But all that is in the back of your mind. Mm-hmm. You really think about it. And maybe the best FBI agents are the ones that don't overthink it. But those thoughts were always in my brain. Mm-hmm. If I arrested somebody, there were times that, plenty of times, I felt sorry for somebody. I would, after getting into their head, and I know, like, God, this guy's going to go to federal prison for, you know, a decade. I mean, are they going to be in better shape when they get out? I mean, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with the justice system. And sure, justice needs to be performed. I'm not trying to, you know, say throw it all out here or anything. Mm-hmm. But there are questions and there are inconsistencies. And when you're interviewing somebody like that, and you get in their head and you realize, yeah, there in some cases, not always, maybe more often or less often than not, whatever the right phrase is, you realize, oh, I could have been this person.
Yeah.
And that's kind of scary. And also, maybe that's not the best thing for an FBI agent. So some of those thoughts and your question just kind of drove me down that path. Aside from the process changes and things like that, also just made me realize maybe this isn't the best career for me. Yeah. If I'm getting in people's heads and seeing like, oh yeah, they came from these circumstances, my brain goes to, how can, as a society, not that we can make it perfect overnight, this is a 100-year plus challenge, how over time can we make things better, ensure, you know, equal education for everybody? I mean, education, you know, again, cliched here, but education is so important. And many of these criminals, they dropped out or they had terrible education, you know, just a lack of, I mean, and so you start seeing these trends like, well, maybe we could not need all these, you know, 10,000 FBI agents and police. Maybe we don't need this many if we could fix these problems in society. Now, sorry, last point here. I'll let you keep talking here.
It's all good.
Just taking over the podcast at this point, I realize. But that's where, you know, you get into some of the defund the police questions. Yep. Now, my knee-jerk reaction, I'm opening this can of worms. my knee-jerk reaction to that, first time I'm hearing that is, well, that's ridiculous. You know, like, no, the police are the good guys. I mean, I'm former, you know, I've worked with police all the time at a San Diego police radio, you know, police in general, great people, and FBI agents, great people. So of course, the first thing I hear kind of is like, oh, wait a minute, I don't think that's a good idea. But if you listen to the dialogue, and I don't know the right number, I'm not saying that should be a percentage or what have you, but if you actually listen to the dialogue, and everybody claims they listen to all sides, right? But I really try to. And the more I listened and thought about it, and this is even, you know, within the last probably 6 months, a little bit of a changing of my opinion is, well, maybe if you did, you know, and this comes back to that quality conversation, if you direct, you know, if you do direct more funds to community programs, education, and some of the root causes and some of these early onset things that result in crime maybe 15 years later, if you start investing more in that, then in theory you should need less, you know, less funding for police. And so again, I feel terrible coming on the podcast that any police officer or FBI agent is like, good job, Vince, telling us that we don't need as much money. No, they're vastly underfunded police departments. It varies widely. But I will say that it's a fair dialogue and conversation to have that, you know, we don't have an unlimited budget for everything in the world. How much do we want to spend on enforcement? And are there things that we could stop, you know, enforcing that really don't make that much difference and divert some of that funding to the things that really are important, education and community programs, to try to prevent the crime downstream later on? It's like fixing the problem up front. Fix the machine. Don't just keep making more bad parts. Fix the machine up front. So anyway, so a little tangent there. Did that make sense? No,
I completely agree with the antecedent needing to maybe be addressed. If not completely, maybe more actively. Before we continue, I wanted to ask how much what are we doing on time? I forgot to ask you before.
Oh no, it so happens. I knew I could only guarantee an hour, but I'm good to go. So, you know, probably an hour and a half. I probably should drop off and make sure I still have my job over here. But no, I'm good. I'm good to keep going, guys. For sure.
Okay.
You are. Yeah.
All right. I did have a question about, and I see a guitar behind you, and read in your bio that you compose music. So I was curious because I haven't heard you say anything about that on your channel, or I haven't gotten to that point in your book if you do talk about it. But what type of music do you like to compose? Because we're musicians as well.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic. Now we're getting to the stuff I really love. So great. So yes, you know, that I kind of have lots of hobbies, you know, just almost unlimited. I'm interested in everything, but music's always been very special to me. And you know, I'm an old band nerd, you know, all that stuff. So I've always been involved with music as a kid on up to some degree. And by the way, when I was in the FBI, my hobbies are real important to me. I mean, I love my hobbies, and music is one of those. And FBI gets in the way of hobbies. So just another selfish thing, but I think it's good to be well-rounded and do these things. So I want to hear more about your music interest as well. But so for me, I am kind of a hobbyist musician. I currently produce music under the artist name Austin Apolog. And it's hobbyist stuff. You know, it's nothing like my FBI. I wish my music stuff would kind of take off like the FBI stuff did, but it doesn't. But you know, that's okay. Music business stuff, but I do it for me. And yeah,
I think it's because the music industry is more saturated than the ex-FBI agents around.
This is true. I've got the market cornered on FBI agents who are also like to blab and go on and on. So yes, not a big supply of those. But so I do more, generally I do more kind of electronic music, but kind of a wide variety of styles. Funny enough, my most, probably most streamed or popular song, which none of my stuff, no one even listened to at all in the United States, but I do occasionally get some Shazams and notifications of streams in other countries. So I did an all kind of orchestra arrangement. I had a very electronic song. And I did an all orchestra arrangement, nothing electronic music, just some kind of classical music style. And that turned out to be the most listened to song that I've had and downloaded. So anyway, but I will throw out that a couple of things. The one thing I want to tout on this podcast or plug is anybody, please listening, and you guys as well, if you just Google Austin Pug Rescue. When I say pug, I'm talking about the Chinese pugs. That's another hobby of mine. My wife and I help out the pug rescue, and we're the people that dress up our pugs in costumes and enter them in contests. So we are those people. But if you Google Austin Pug Rescue or Google Merry Puggin Christmas. So, you know, Merry Puggin Christmas. And we put out a song, and it's called Merry Puggin Christmas. It's a holiday song. We just released it. 100% of all proceeds, you know, and it's on iTunes and all that stuff, but 100% every penny goes to Austin Pug Rescue. Is just for fun. But that's the one thing I want to tout. It kind of is sort of evokes the old, you know, Alvin and the Chipmunks and some of the old cheesy, you know, kind of Christmas songs. But
I love that Alvin and the Chipmunks. What was it? Christmas Time Is Here. All time yes. Favorite Christmas song.
Oh, fantastic. Well, you actually might like. So, yeah. So I'm sorry. Google Merry Puggin Christmas, everybody. If you play it, even the YouTube plays help, you know, stream a little bit. And then if you do love it and want to add it to your holiday routine, just a nice 99-cent purchase. Of course, Apple keeps their share, but the vast majority of it, every penny that Apple doesn't keep, we're giving to Pug Rescue, and just kind of a fun thing there. So
awesome. Anyway. I'll link all of that, all of your information on the description of this podcast for anyone that is listening that is interested.
Fantastic.
I myself will also listen.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. You know, one other thing I'll throw out too is you just never know what life has in store for you. So another kind of hobby that's been a music extension of mine, I've become sort of the musician. I wrote some music for the intro of a podcast, and I had a song out that kind of got some attention from podcasts. So the Austin FC, it's a new Major League Soccer team that's ramping up in Austin. They start play here in 2021 pretty soon. So I've kind of been adopted and brought into the fold for kind of the main podcast for that. And I even get to meet with the main organization. And some of my music stuff may actually wind up on the video boards and being played during during matches. And so that's real exciting for me, especially just as a hobbyist musician with, you know, 19 YouTube followers, whatever it is, you know. Yeah. So we're talking really small potatoes right here. But, but you know, it, you never know in life. And at the end of the day, if you're doing something that you enjoy, and for me, if I have two people, not one person that says, you know, I really like that song, thank you. And I see that on YouTube or whatever, I'm like, yep, that's great. I'm glad at least somebody, you know, experienced what I was trying to convey, you know, musically. And I can get lost. I can get on this keyboard and, you know, produce music. And that's the one thing that I can look at the clock and it'll suddenly be, you know, it'll be 8 p.m. and then suddenly it's 2 a.m. I'm like, oh, God, I'm sure you guys probably would echo similar sentiments. Tell me more about you.
Not as regularly anymore for me. I used to be in a band myself, but Ashok currently does a lot of similar to the orchestration that you mentioned.
Yeah, I do. It's kind of weird. It's kind of a niche genre, but it's mostly electronic. It's supposed to be much more atmospheric. It's it started out as a very niche genre called dungeon synth. Out of all things, it's supposed to be very atmospheric, kind of like me and Murat both come from, I suppose, a metal background.
Yes.
So it's the electronic, I suppose, evolution of that. But yeah, it's under the name Vacarch, V-A-C-A-R-C-H. Sure, if you want to write it down.
I'm writing it down.
Also, also, the listeners of the podcast, if there are any, which I'm not sure. Yeah. And yeah, we started this podcast out because one day we were at work because we work together, and I was like, you know, it would be really great to do a radio show where you just play Gregorian chants, because you know, they're really, I think it's beautiful music and we're both into it. So that's how Our Thoughts Tonight started randomly.
Yeah.
I love it, and just the pacing and just kind of starting off, it just, I love just the podcast, just the chance at first. It just puts you kind of in a more thoughtful mood. It's not this, you know, like, you know, you turn on CNN or whatever. It's just, you know, it's hey, let's slow down. Let's talk about some thought provoking things and listen to music. And I love it. It's great.
Yeah. The whole thing with the podcast was, it was almost an outlet of our regular nights at work, basically. It was basically just, okay, let's just experience that for everybody else. You know, Gregorian chants is definitely a big part of that, though.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. Excellent. Yeah.
So have you been on any other podcasts, or have you met any people through YouTube or your book that, like us, have reached out to you to join on a podcast, hypothetically, or a situation like this for an interview?
Sure. No, I was honored. This was the first podcast that I've been invited to actually participate as a guest, you know, help a little production.
Oh, wow. Well, you're our first guest.
It works out. Beautiful. Yeah.
First.
I love it. Yeah, no, it's definitely fun for me, and and a big honor. I appreciate it. I know you guys are, you know, trying to grow your base and everything, of course, and I'm honored, very honored to be the first guest. So
yeah,
very cool piece of history right there. I love it. I do occasionally get a little, you know, a question from a book, you know, people writing a book, you know, for some help, or like, would this really happen or what have you. So anybody that's interested in, you know, vincent.sellers.com, contact information there, or through YouTube, you know, I just love helping people out. And, you know, it's one of those things that I like to share the information just because nobody else seems to want to. And so far the FBI hasn't tried to muzzle me. I did have to go through all their publication stuff for the book. And again, typical process, which I just thought was hilarious, is they made me change everybody's names except for my own. I'm like, okay, if you think that really helps security somehow. But if you, you know, and you're into it, I really didn't have any massive state secrets or anything that I could share. So, but you know, but it's somebody's job. Yeah, giant bureaucracy. It's somebody's job to apparently review the books that FBI agents read. Right, and then make, you know, suggest changes to make sure that stays confidential.
That is really amazing.
Yeah.
I would have never even thought that that was somebody's job.
It is. Yeah. Who knew, right? I mean, that's how big the FBI is. And there's probably someone's job to audit them and make sure they're doing their job correctly. So,
anyway. Yeah. Very bureaucratic.
Yes.
Earlier at the beginning of the podcast, you mentioned you actually checked a few of our episodes. I'm curious as to which ones you skimmed through or which ones you listened to a little bit.
Do you remember? Sure. So the election coverage is spectacular. I love that.
Oh my gosh. I don't even remember that one, honestly.
Yeah. It's fun, you know, and I'm nodding my head. I really agree with almost everything you guys say. And I just wish everybody could just have a nice dialogue and think through things. So that in particular, and then the last one with the five kind of traits or what have you called, you know, the compassion, pride, community, all those, those are also very, again, kind of thought provoking. And I just love the thought process, but the election ones are anything related to that or just fun. Cause
yeah,
I don't know. I just,
we're
I,
getting
I
get, heated.
Yeah, no, it's a good time. No, it's a good time for sure. And it's a very interesting moment in history for the country. And being so, you know, so divided, it's almost unreal to me. And people just can't have a dialogue. And it's interesting to me personally, even going back just to say the 2012 election. I mean, we had Mitt Romney versus Barack Obama. And to me, where we are now versus just 8 years ago, the lack of respect and craziness coming out of one side in particular, just off the charts. And we're digressing a little bit here, but so that's why I appreciate the conversation and the thoughts that you guys have. And wow, what an election indeed, right?
Yeah.
and still not over, I guess, in some people's brains. And that is where this does kind of tie back in, though, to the FBI and the importance of law enforcement and the attorney general. That role is very important. It's concerning to me. I've never, I mean, I'm, you know, almost, I'm approaching 50 now. I'm an old man. And so I've never seen anything like this. And it never occurred to me. And I'm sure you could go back to the origins of World War II. And I'm gotta be careful about what I say here, but it's amazing. Some of the steps and some of the things, quite frankly, that have come out of this presidential administration trying to desperately hold on to power and ignoring our country's basic constitutional election, you know, process. Like, I can't believe it. I mean, if there's ever been a moment in my lifetime where I feel like, God, are we heading towards some kind of civil war? I'm not a conspiracy theorist at all. One of those oh, this is going to happen. I'm not, but it's like if things continued the way they're going, I'm like, wow, are we really doing this where we're going to ignore votes and just have ridiculous court challenges? And sad to say, my own attorney general from the state of Texas, Ken Paxton, is filing ridiculous federal lawsuits challenging results in other states. Like, just mind your own business. And he's in a host of trouble. Believe, he is a total, sorry, I will say this, I hope you don't mind, it's a total shit show, cut that word, or dumpster fire.
No, totally nicely. Great. No.
But God, what a crazy man. And it fascinates me to no end, and not trying to pick political sides. And I think that it's fair to have all, you know, perspectives, just kind of caveat that. And I don't consider myself a dyed in the wool, you know, either party, but there was no question what the right way to vote was in this last election. I mean, come on. But I will say it's just interesting to me that on the Republican side, that the Republicans are standing for this to allow their party leader and other leaders in these states to fight a ridiculous fight trying to overthrow a legitimate election. How on earth do the Republicans think they will ever attract another voter that thinks in a sane manner? I mean, if I was a Republican politician, which I'm certainly not, I would be outraged and trying to distance myself just so quickly. Like, dude, I don't know what's going on with these other nut jobs. I'm all about, if you win the election, you win the election. I mean, come on, people. So anyway, I'm digressing quite a bit here, but that's where I think
your election coverage
is fascinating. And anyway, I, You probably don't strongly disagree with me, I would suspect. But
yeah. I mean, I remember months before the election, I was just terrified of what just happened. I'm kind of like you, this whole civil war notion where I'm not a conspiracy theorist either, but it's like the whole idea of Trump refusing, you know, the election results was just terrifying. Luckily, it seems to be somewhat water under the bridge. I actually want to ask you this. If for the future of Trump personally, there's talks of him trying to come back in 2024. There's also talks of, like, is he going to be locked up once he gets out of office? Like, what's, what's your predictions for that? Like, because that's bad. I mean, you know, yeah.
Who knows, right? He's such a, I mean, I guess egomaniac, whatever you want to call it. He will convince himself that the Americans want him back. And I don't know how he convinces others within his party to support him. I just don't. I mean, and I get it. 4 years ago, new guy coming into town, drain the swamp. We're going to do things a whole new way. And then, you know, then he didn't just fires everybody every couple of months that he hires to try to do something when they disagree with him. So where that goes in 2024 is, I remember hearing for the, you know, the first time, you know, whatever, a month or so, whatever, after the election, after he lost, like, okay, well, that's interesting. Adios. but then, like, maybe not so fast is it, you know, he may be gearing up for 2024. So a few years ago, I would have said that's absolutely ridiculous. In his brain, maybe he will, and he's delusional. He won't get 10 people to follow him. But on the flip side, somehow he got more people to vote for him this time than he did in 2016. And I don't want to piss off half of your audience, but good God, guys, what are you thinking? I mean, were you awake the last 4 years, and did you see what happened? I don't know. I just don't know. And I know there's, to be fair, I'm kind of guilty of, you know, bashing another side here. There's a fair dialogue. There's fair questions and policy questions, between the different parties. And I respect that totally. And I struggle with some of those too. I mean, I'm not an automatic for either party by any means, but, so I know a long-winded answer here. At this point, nothing would shock me. I can't fathom that this one was as close as it was. That I just can't believe, because he didn't even win the popular vote last time in 2016. He didn't win the popular vote, right? And so, like, well, how on earth? He's not going to get any more people. Surely people are going to move away that saw the job that he did. He had one opportunity, and now, well, he should be fired. And surely people are rational and see that we can do better. I mean, let's put somebody up. Let's try somebody else. If Biden screws up and is as bad, then we'll put somebody else in 4 years. You know, I mean, that's fine, right? But I just can't believe that we got to where we are in 2020 with it being as close as it was. And so, therefore, you have to say, well, I guess there's a chance that you're going to have some stubborn people that are like, yeah, we're gonna do it again in 2024. But I think for the Republican Party, that would be a terrible disaster, and that they would do well to go back to finding somebody, I don't know, a Mitt Romney type, or somebody that at least can debate policy and is a respectable, you know, human being.
Just a quick addition to the podcast. I'm going to turn off my camera real quick. I'm just here for the time being. Sure. I'm still here. Just letting you guys know for the podcast.
Okay. Don't you have a thing you have to go to at 10:30, Ashik?
I should be good. If you actually just give me a sec, I'll be back in like 10 seconds.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
All right. You guys continue.
All right. So, let's see. Yeah. We talked about the, YouTube channel, and I'm sure you've noticed, that there are a lot of, aspiring, whether they're law enforcement officers or they're aspiring law enforcement officers. But I know that a lot of people on your comments section have asked some interesting questions about, you know, the process that you made your series of videos on, you know, the application process. Have you encountered any questions that you think were completely, you know, coming from a place where, you know, like any great questions that you've encountered via the YouTube comments?
Sure. Yeah, that's a good question. And man, to be honest, none really popped to mind. I wind up getting a fair number of repeat questions, I guess I would say, and I wind up answering multiple times. And so, unfortunately, some of those stand out in my brain, but those are ones that I've tried to, you know, I kind of have the originally started off, you know, how to basically becoming an FBI agent, Road to Quantico, whatever I called it, the original series of six episodes about joining. And then I had so many questions about life in the FBI and some of the stuff I cover in the book, but I was like, you know, I should just continue that. And that kind of, after answering so many questions multiple times, I was like, you know, I'm just going to keep going with this thing and create a FBI talk series and just talk about FBI stuff, even though in my brain, I'm like, yeah, it's just in a couple of years. What do I know? But the truth is, yeah, after a couple of years, you get subjected to a lot of stuff that if you've never been in, you want to know. And the thing that sticks out to me on the comments that, and sometimes, you know, email contacts as well, I welcome those. There are a lot of, great kids coming up. And there's, I say kids, I mean, they're kids in high school, a lot of the time and that type of thing. And then some, in college and, you know, and that gives me a lot of hope for the future because it's easy to watch the news or just look around and, you know, quickly draw some judgment about the state of the union of the youth in America. Right. And it's been that way for probably for all of eternity. Certainly every generation thinks the next generation is going to screw it up and, you know, they don't know their manners and, you know, whatever, they have it easy, but wah. But if anything, the thing that stands out to me most on the comments and also again email contacts is people that are good natured and want to make a difference in the world. And probably my biggest surprise is of the whole thing, and the reason I still do it is I don't get a lot of hate on there. And not to say there haven't been a few comments here or there, but I've been shocked. I mean, it's YouTube. You have to expect a good percentage, anything on the internet, right? Anything you say, it could be, I love puppies and, you know, cat people are going to come on there and say, how dare you not say you like cats? I mean, I don't know, but it's amazing to me the how positive the response has been. And that tells me that the people that are finding my way to the channel and actually watching that stuff and not going to sleep and good for you. And such as you, Murat, is you're good people that there's no question. The people coming to that channel and watching those at their core are good people. They want to do good in the world. They're the people that are ultimately going and applying in the FBI. And so for me, that engagement and the questions they have they're so positive, and I can tell they're coming from a good place and wanting to make the world better that it really, I don't know. It's really uplifting for me to see that. So anyway, I don't coming back around to your question. I don't remember anything in particular that jumped out, but nevertheless, that's kind of just a broad perspective there.
No, I agree. Yeah. That's kind of along the lines of what I meant, because I have noticed that, that type of environment in your comment section, that people are so extremely grateful for your videos, because people really do, in my opinion, like myself, care about that aspiration. And you actually describe it really well, where, you know, you talk about wanting to become an FBI agent is like this, you know, ultimate thing in your life. If you do want to, you're either, I don't know, you know better than me, and you can tell me if I'm wrong here, but if you want to go in that career path, you are like pedal to the metal, or you don't want to do it, as far as I know.
Pretty much. Yeah. That is pretty much the case. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's interesting. I mean, for me, that, you know, there were kind of a series of life events that, and I may mention it a little bit in the book, but there were some life events that kind of said, hey, you know, I've been in the corporate world for almost 10 years, and that can be depressing as well. I mean, you just feel like, yeah, I'm in this cube. Am I actually making a difference in the world? I'm making some money for somebody. I'm getting paid, but somebody that owns the company is making a lot of money. Good for them, I guess. But, you know, I'm only here. I get one chance at this life, and I want to do some good. And, you know, in the meantime, you know, that father that passed away from lung cancer, And I plug, don't smoke, please people. Just not a good idea. Yeah, again, that's not breaking news here, but, you know, I can attest, please don't do that. And you know, and went through a divorce, just, basically a very, very unfortunate, bad experience with, picking not very well or wisely, for spouse number one. Spouse number two is fantastic. We're together, same one that's been with my whole adventure, on the FBI, journey. But, nevertheless, you know, I was kind of at a point in life where, like, God, you know, I just was questioning. I'd always been on this one path. And again, kind of back to that concept of, you know, education and environment. I mean, I come from a, you know, the town, literally the town's called West Texas. It's in Central Texas, but it's 2000 person town. I grew up on a dirt road. It's not a very, you know, well-to-do community, but it's good people and good schools. Not a lot of money, but good teachers. I was fortunate. And my parents, you know, absolutely, it wasn't an option whether I was going to go to college or not. My background, it was, no, you're going to school and you're going to do it. And you're, you know, and so I've kind of always was on this path and made it into the corporate world. And then, you know, life wasn't maybe as fulfilling, or I wasn't seeing it that way at the time, and thought, I want to do something else. And so that kind of drove me into the FBI. And again, there are plenty of people that all backgrounds that go in, and many of them are thrilled. And some of them, it's a luck of the draw, wind up getting into very interesting investigations, some, you know, white collar, and some of these long-term, you know, maybe mortgage fraud. Some people would be like, oh, boring, or insurance, you know, health insurance fraud. They've got whole squads of people investigating that. To me, that's kind of interesting. You're trying to put the pieces together and arresting their crooked doctors out there that are taking advantage of, you know, Medicare, you know, Medicare fraud's a big deal. And so, to me, that kind of works kind of interesting is, you get these clues and you're piecing together these bits of information and interviewing people and building this big case. So kind of depends on what you wind up doing when you get in. But for me, just responding to bank robberies, which sounds cool. I mean, I've seen it on TV and it is cool for a little while. And then you're like, okay, there's another. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it's just at some point, it just kind of, you know, you realize like, what am I doing here? I'm just responding to crime. San Diego police is here. So did I make any difference? Not really. And so anyway, but in the FBI, depending on how long you're willing to stay in and the kind of the path that you go, and some of that's luck of the draw, you certainly can have a very rewarding career in there. So I don't want to scare anyone off from applying and trying it out and in life, right? I mean, I do my music stuff. It's not going to take off ever. I'm not going to be a massive music success, but it's fun. And I don't want to get to the end of my life having regrets of not tried something, you know? I mean, I'll tell you another truth. I'm one of those people that tries everything to the extent I applied to the FBI and to NASA. I wanted to also, like, while I'm at it, why don't I just shoot to be an astronaut? So, doctor, they didn't want me as an astronaut because I'm not a brilliant, you know, PhD mechanical engineer that also is a former, you know, fighter pilot. But, you know, hey, you got to try, right? And so sometimes these things work out. So so you never know. Be careful what you wish for. FBI was, but it wasn't a whim, honestly. That I'd always felt that, you know, kind of that draw, had it in the back of my mind. Grades weren't good enough in college to even apply for an internship, by the way. I remember being depressed at that because at the time they had this FBI internship, you had to have a 3.0, and I didn't have a 3.0. And I remember
thinking about applying to that.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I mean, I thought, well, good God, I can't even apply for an internship. Maybe I'm not FBI agent material, but you know what? You stick with it. And next thing you know, in life, you never know what's going to come your way. And hey, I made it in, and then I've already described my journey, made it in and then out. And so.
That's awesome.
Did you have anything to add, Ashik?
Actually,
or should we start wrapping up?
I may have to go soon, but, this is a big, change in topic, but I had a question earlier on when we were discussing politics. I may have to go after this though.
Okay. Yeah, we might as well wrap up after this question.
Okay. In the brief moment when I was gone, you were talking about the youth and whatnot. And earlier when we were talking about the both sides argument in politics, I just wanted to hear your opinion on basically the new left, basically the whole Bernie crowd, the whole Bernie crowd. I suppose if you want to go the defund the police crowd, I mean, we've already talked about that, yeah, but sure, basically sure, the whole new left compared with maybe the new right or something like that.
Oh, interesting. Wow. Yeah. Okay. Sure. Sure. So, yeah, and I'll be honest. And part of this is maybe, you know, a reflection of my age. A lot of the, I think the new left, some of the policies and Bernie, and by the way, I actually did go see Bernie, at his rally in Austin, Texas in person. Wow. And, you know, I applauded for him and stuff. I like Bernie Sanders, because I feel like he actually tells the truth and tells his opinion. So I respect that. And mm-hmm. you know what, if he made it to be president, I would support him. But on the flip side, even though I went to his rally, part of it, honestly, was to see the Trumpers, see their reaction and their anger. So, hey, I'm as much as guilty as watching a car wreck as the next guy, right? So
yeah.
I thought it was an interesting scene. And they were in Austin, Texas, though. They were greatly outnumbered. But it was an interesting thing. But to be honest, though, yeah, I think some of the policies are one, I don't agree with them. And two, I think that it alienates enough people and that divide, and same for the right. I think Joe Biden probably was the only candidate out of the remaining. And by the way, my guy was Pete Buttigieg, by far. I think he's brilliant. I could go on all day. He's my guy. I will vote for him. I will campaign for him endlessly. Whatever. He's got the
honesty as well.
Yeah, exactly. And so, but I think some of the policies and some of the just the dialogue and maybe some of it's just the delivery. I think they go almost go too far in that they alienate so many people, and you're kind of carving off into sort of a niche demographic. And I will say that over history tells us that usually the people that seem extreme, you know, at their time turn out to be right. They turn out to be the good guys. And so I say that knowingly, and it may be that in 100 years that we say, absolutely, Bernie Sanders was 100% correct on every single point. And there you go. So that's certainly possible. But at the end of the day, I will respect and support somebody that is just tells the truth and isn't trying to literally steal an election. I think that if you get too divided, that divisiveness within the party and that kind of that extreme left, for me personally, it turns me off a little bit because I don't see enough of the dialogue, at least, and acknowledgement of each other's points. And even to be fair, I'll mention the Black Lives Matter thing, which I support. It's clearly there are problems. It's much more complicated than just police kill three times as many black men as white men. That is 100% true, and I don't debate it, but after you make that statement, then you have to start kind of digging into the root causes, and there are lots of them. But to me, it's almost like saying, you know, you've got a bunch of patients dying of cancer in the hospital. You know, again, my father died of lung cancer, and you need to look at the root cause. And some of that is probably systematic racism, but not all of it. There are the education gaps, there are lots of other issues, and I will throw out a little number statistic, and I even wrote this one down just to be sure in case we open the can of worms here. So did you guys know, and I'm big on facts and I'm not big on cherry picking. This was just a little quick Google this morning, just doing a little just trying to think about it. So this was from a CNN story. So if you look at the number of homicides each year in the United States, it's about 10,000 by gun deaths, not including the police. So take the police completely out of the equation. So if you look at the disparity there in the United States, and this is from the Annals of Internal Medicine and this is a CNN article from April 23rd, 2018, the fatality or homicide rate, again, police totally out of the equation, for white people is 2.10 people per 100,000. And that's over about the last decade, roughly, an analysis. It's about two people out of 100,000 are going to die of a gun homicide. Black race, 29 out of 100,000 will die. And this is totally taking police out of the equation. So so my point is that absolutely, but we need much more transparency. Black Lives Matter, there is something to that. And we need to be able to have a dialogue. But the extreme left that doesn't want to have a dialogue and the right that doesn't want to listen, shame on them. We need to dig into these systematic, the issues that created a lot of the conditions in the first place. Racism absolutely is one. We need to be able to, we got to do better, and we have to be able to report bad cops and whistleblowers and all the cultural things we were talking about with the hierarchy and stuff. That's a problem. And there's no doubt in my mind that is a problem. But we have to be able to look at, you know, education and, you know, and all of these factors in the community to try to right the ship, because just saying the police are strictly responsible for, you know, that three times the police killings, saying it's solely on the police is not fair to the police, because there's a lot of underlying, there's a lot of other underlying things. So my point is you have to have a dialogue and be able to look at all of those factors. So anyway, I'm way off track there, but anyway, just want to get that in.
I see.
All right. Cool. Well, I want to thank you so much, and I agree with you on that point of view as well. But I want to thank you so much for being willing to come on, and it was good to meet you. You're one of my favorite YouTubers, and I'm going to finish the book and get back to you on that. And yeah.
Good. Yeah. That sounds good. Yeah, well, keep me in mind. You know, who knows? Maybe one of these future election specials, I might even pop on with you guys or something. That's just fun.
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe a January 20th, so we'll see what happens then, too. Yeah.
That's true. Well, yeah. We might have to organize something, gentlemen, and do something to save the country.
Oh, my God. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts, Ashok?
Just thank you. This was really fun. I'm looking forward to, maybe that January 20th podcast, whatever happens then. This is great. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
I'll definitely check out the music as well. I wrote that down on a piece of paper there.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And I will link everyone to that.
Yeah, that sounds good. I'll shoot an email to you, Murat, with a couple more tidbits to check out.
All right. Well, thank you. I'm going to go ahead and end this podcast with some music and end our stream here. See you guys later.
Adios. Thanks, gentlemen.
All right. See you. Thank you.